Hello again, friends. This is Tom Duncan from Greatest Movie of All Time podcast. And just to give you a precursor of what this episode is about, it is our live stream that we did on Monday, March 11th for our live stream on YouTube. So if you want the video to this, you can go to youtube.com/@, don't forget the at symbol, Gmote Podcast. Again, youtube.com/@Gmote Podcast. Otherwise, you can find us on all of our socials at Gmote Podcast on Instagram, X, Letterboxd, or TikTok at Gmote Podcast. So this is a very raw recording. It is almost completely unedited. I took out a few things on the front and the back end. There's some crackling in the microphones and some other things that I would normally take out in an average week, but just due to the sake of time and what I've got going on in my life, this is a fairly raw, mostly unedited version of what it is on the live stream. And because it exists in perpetuity on the live stream, I didn't want to give you a kind of cut up version of that here on the regular audio feed. But if you would like, again, the video version, you can head over to our channel on YouTube, youtube.com/@Gmote Podcast, to find that there. Otherwise, this is exactly how it happened on Monday, March 11th. Enjoy. This podcast may contain explicit language. Welcome to the Greatest Movie of All Time podcast live stream post-Oscars reaction. I have with me, as always, my co-host,
Dana Duncan. Hello.
And we have a few fresh new faces. So a few of you have probably noticed that I've been name-checking Mr. Andrew Korns quite a bit from our friends over at Revisionist Almanac, but he has decided to join us for this live stream because he was able to get at least 1 hour away from his family.
it's a needed hour away from the family, I'll say that.
Yeah.
I love them, but you need some time away every now and then.
You've been mentioning that the daylight savings changes really messed with things today, correct?
Yeah, daylight savings is a lot of fun until you have children. So one day you'll learn, Tom. One day you'll learn. Dana, I'm sure you're familiar.
Oh, yeah, I'm well aware. And ask Tom about how time away is necessary. I would make them refer to me as Harold because I got tired of listening to, hey, Dad, hey, Dad, hey, Dad.
Yeah, I understand. I'm just happy you're hosting today, Tom. The end of year thing we did was too much with, I think we had 10 people in the room at one point, and that was a lot of people to manage. So I'm happy to be playing second fiddle here.
All right. And we welcome in two brand new guests that through connections of connections, we have been able to join us this evening for our post-Oscars reaction. Betsy and Trent from Never Seen It. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
So what's been going on over at Never Seen It?
Well, we just finished our annual Oscars special, so we watched all the Best Picture nominees, and then we recap all of them. What were we doing before that? I think it was the holidays before that. We were doing Christmas movies.
Yeah, we started doing, we cover Oscar movies just kind of as they come out, and then once the nominations come out, we quickly schedule them as quickly as we possibly can to fit all of them into our schedule. And then on Oscar day, we put out our special, which each of us ranks them from 1 to 10. We have our own individual lists, and then we kind of talk about what we think is going to happen that night.
Yeah. But now we're pivoting far, far away from the Oscars.
Now it's all done. We can react to the actual thing.
Yeah.
Okay. And just as a quick aside, what did you both have as your number one?
So my number one was incredibly fluid, and I changed my mind about 6 times, but I ultimately, because I had to pick something for the recording, I went with Poor Things.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, and if we had recorded probably an hour earlier than when we recorded, it would have been something different.
Possibly.
For you.
Or an hour later.
Yeah. I kind of stuck to my guns. I thought my number one was Oppenheimer, and I thought that was probably going to be my number one, even after not watching any of the other ones yet. So, yeah, it's very much my kind of movie. I love a historical drama, and just the scope of the movie was enough to put me over the edge.
I love listening to all of your guys' episodes, by the way. I've never seen it leading up to the Oscars. But I'm curious, it kind of sounded like you guys would like walk out of the movie theater and immediately sit down and record. Was that kind of what you did? Because everything sounded so fresh and immediate when you guys were recording.
Yeah. It is the entire impetus behind the podcast. It is a reaction podcast more than anything else. Every episode that we have ever done, it is us recording the intro, which is about, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of us talking about what we know about the movie going in, whether it be me who hasn't seen it and Betsy has, or vice versa, or neither of us have seen it. We talk about what we know about it going in.
Or our misconceptions, what we think we know.
Yeah. So, and then we take a break, we go watch the movie, and then immediately after seeing it, we sit down and do a reaction podcast.
Yeah. Excellent. So I know Dana's and mine were both Oppenheimer, and for what it's worth, his number 10 was Poor Things. Just apparently didn't get
it. No, I get it. That's a totally reasonable response.
Sure. I get it. You know, not for everyone. And Andrew, yours was Zone of Interest, right?
Yeah, I'm team Zone of Interest all the way. Oppenheimer, I think, is the deserved winner in terms of, like, I understand the magnitude of the situation and the culmination of Nolan's career, but the Zone of Interest, I think, will be the one I look back in 5-10 years as the thing that moved me the most. The theatrical experience is something I'll probably never forget in terms of how, I don't know, there was so much emotion. And Tom, I know you kind of mentioned this on one of your recent episodes, that you feel like you need a second watch because you had to commit so much focus to every second of every frame with the subtitles, the amount of sound design that was happening, everything that was happening. It requires multiple viewings, and I've seen it 3 times now, and it just gets better for me.
Yeah, and that's why I really kind of wanted the reaction, and it's rare that I want the reaction out of my sister and my mother, but specifically on that one because they know German, so that they didn't have to focus on the subtitles as much as the rest of us and see if that somehow changes the opinion. And I do think I didn't get my sister's reaction and she never really responded to that. So I don't know what happened there, but my mother appreciated the film. And I think some of that is due to being able to concentrate more on the sound and the visual than the rest of us were able to do concurrently.
Mm-hmm.
But let's jump right into it. This was kind of a predictable Oscars for the most part. We knew, I would say, probably all of the major big awards pretty much coming in. Like, there wasn't anything that was too unpredictable except for maybe Best Actress, which for me was probably the jump off the couch moment for me. How about anybody else? Any like big surprise that you really felt was in the show?
Yeah, that was the big one for me. But it was, like you said, kind of also not a surprise because you knew there was a possibility it would happen. Just all of the things leading up to awards night, I was like, well, it's been Lily, it's been Lily, it's been Lily. And then she won the SAG. And usually my last minute determinator is who wins the SAG, because it's the same voting populace. And she won there. So it seemed sound logic that, well, she'll probably win an Oscar.
I think that's really the unique thing about this Oscars, is because everything else was pretty predictable and it went as planned. So that's really the only surprise. But in other years, that would not have been a surprise because you know who it's between.
Yeah.
Usually, and I think I said this on our show in part one, we released 2 parts because it just ran long. But when the SAG has announced or awarded somebody of color at their show, it traditionally has worked against them when it comes to Oscars night. Now, with the expanded voting base, I'm not sure if that continues to have a thing, but it worked that way with Chadwick Boseman and Anthony Hopkins a couple of years ago when we had the exact same thing. Yeah. He won the SAG award. Everybody expected him to win, including the producers of the show. Obviously. And then Anthony Hopkins ends up winning. So I wonder if even with the expanded Academy, if it's still working in those ways. Honestly, I thought for the entire duration of what I've seen, I thought Emma Stone was in like a class by herself of these 5 nominees. I can respect other people that have a different opinion, but for me, I thought she was the most deserving if we're going to just do pure acting performance. But I would have been okay with any of the three that could have very easily won. Hulur, which was kind of unpredictable. It was this weird wild card because she hadn't participated in any of the precursor stuff. And then obviously Gladstone, who was kind of the semi-favorite, had kind of pushed ahead, but you didn't know exactly. So for me, it was a jump off the couch moment only from the standpoint that I didn't think that she would win, and I thought she was the most deserving, if it's just me.
Yeah, I felt like I had a leg up on kind of having an idea of who was going to win, because we did this massive like ballots project where we had a couple hundred people send us ballots. And so I got a pretty good idea of what I thought people were leaning towards. And even though in our project, Lily won Best Actress, we did a preferential voting for all six categories as opposed to just Best Picture like they do at the Oscars. But Emma came up number one way more than Lily did. But Emma also ended up in fifth place more because that movie, I think, has proved more polarizing, as Betsy and Dana are on opposite ends of the spectrum there. Exactly. Yeah. So I kind of had a feeling Emma was going to take it because the people who were passionate about Poor Things were really in favor of it. And Lily was just kind of, I don't know, people that didn't seem like were as strong into Lily's performance as the people who really loved Emma's.
Dad, any big moments for you?
Well, the Best Actress was not a jump out of the couch or off the couch moment. It was kind of like shift on the couch moment for me.
I suppose when you're 60, it's harder to jump off the couch.
Yeah, well, quite frankly, the thing that was the most shocking to me was why the hell Ariana Grande came out wearing what looks like she was walking in a pile of Charmin toilet paper rolls.
It's called fashion.
Oh, that was so bad. Not to mention John Cena standing there virtually naked. I'm talking about eye candy. I had to ask your mother to come on in because I figured she'd enjoy it.
Still had the Birkenstocks, though.
Yeah. Wow.
Beefcake.
Yeah, they're trying anything and everything they can to draw interest in the academies, or the Oscars. So I guess those were my moments that I went, okay, yeah.
All right, initial reactions for you, Andrew, and this is a non-Gosling moment. We'll save that for another segment here. So just
not a single category really caught my caught me by surprise. Honestly, I think there were at least two clear favorites in every category that I thought it was going to go one or the other. I think that there was a three in a row where it went makeup, hairstyle, production design, costume design, all for Poor Things. I was happy that all three of those went to Poor Things. And I even texted you when those three things happened. I said, this is a really good sign for Emma that the people who were into Poor Things have clearly backed it. And so I felt that those at that moment, the 1, 2, 3 for Poor Things, that Emma was ultimately going to take it. And I'm happy because I think that film deserves recognition. And I think Yorgos did a lot of interesting creative things. So I guess I didn't really leap off the couch, but I was very happy for Poor Things, which I think you and I have talked about is like second degree level of feminism compared to Barbie. I think it just does a lot of cool stuff for, the female perspective. So happy for Poor Things in general for the night.
Yeah. When we were doing our Poor Things episode, we do a recap of all of the Oscar, all the categories it's nominated for. And as Betsy was reading them off, I said, man, you're reading all these off and I cannot think of any one of them that you could say, oh no, there's no chance in hell that's going to win that.
Right.
It all had a chance.
Yep.
And I will say that it has followed a pattern of this decade so far where there's one that kind of sweeps a lot of the technical or below the line categories.
Mm. Yeah.
Oppenheimer and this kind of split in some of those degrees, but last year it was All Quiet on the Western Front, and we had Dune do that a couple of years ago where it swept a lot of the below the line categories. So it's not unusual that we have two films that kind of dominate the night, one with all the below the line and one above the line, so to say. And we got a lot of that with Oppenheimer, obviously winning four of the top six. But I still think it was rather predictable. We kind of knew by the time we were going into last night that American Fiction was probably going to win screenplay. We kind of knew that Anatomy of a Fall was going to probably win original screenplay. We knew the two supporting categories. We kind kind of had a fairly good idea that actor was going to go to Murphy, but there was still a slight outside chance. We knew Oppenheimer and Nolan were basically a virtual lock. It was just kind of some of the other categories. One that I was really happy about because I thought it was a little bit of a toss-up, but it was kind of the one that I really wanted to win was Last Repair Shop in the short category.
Yes.
I really loved that film. Like, I have nothing against Andrew's pick. It was my number two was Barber of Little Rock. But for me, when I got to Last Repair Shop, that to me was the one that probably moved me the most. So a lot of things that I expected, but I still thought it was a really good night just overall.
If there was one real surprise to me that I was very happy about, I thought for sure Oppenheimer was going to win sound design just because it was winning everything. And so when Zone won, I was ecstatic because, as I've already said, like the Zone of Interest just moved me in a way. And the sound design in that film is something so unique that nothing's ever done before. So it was nice to see it get recognized, where I thought Oppenheimer was a fantastic sound design, but I don't think it did anything that the Zone didn't do better.
I picked Zone for sound, and
nice.
I was like, no, the entire movie hinges on that sound design working.
If it doesn't work,
that movie doesn't work.
Right.
And that's why I related it to Sound of Metal from a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
It's the most important use of sound in a movie this year. And that's why I said Zone should win. I didn't have the stones to pick it like you did, but...
I did. I am... unabashed. I will go and do exactly what has to be done to win a ballot. I had 19 right this year.
Dang,
if that gives you an indication. Yeah, and I got second place. I still didn't go far enough.
we actually had an Oscars viewing party.
Yeah.
Our local art house theater.
Mm-hmm.
2 years in a row now, we've been invited to go over there and just have a watch party, and everybody comes together. You can bring food, drinks, whatever you want to do, and there's a ballot that you fill out, you submit in advance, and there's prizes at the end of the night. You got second place last year. I got fourth place this year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Excellent. So any best speeches that we'd like to highlight? I actually thought it was kind of a subdued speech night for the most part.
I had a couple. The Ukraine
one stood out to me.
Mm-hmm.
Glazer, which we'll try not to go too far into, stood out a little bit to me. The Cord Jefferson one stood out to me.
Yeah.
Any other ones for anybody else?
I mean, when Divine Joy Randolph won, I cried.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was the final cry count?
Two. It stopped at two, but I'm not surprised.
In the rest of the show.
Yeah.
I really appreciated the Christopher Nolan speech. Just talking about the fact that, film movies in general haven't been around for that long, relatively speaking, when it comes to other art forms. So movies only being about 100 years old, what more is the medium going to do in the next 100 years? So it's an interesting concept to really think about.
And I know that people kind of focused on that line, but I really focused on the next line he had after that, that you felt me important enough to include me in the history of it.
Right.
And to me, that where people talk about it meaningfully, what their place in recognizing the legacy of what they're doing.
And Nolan is a really old school guy.
Yes.
So he appreciates the history of cinema, as it were. The other one was, of course, the adapted screenplay winner, talking about the fact that studios need to be less risk averse. They need to be putting money into more projects, not fewer. And still spending the same amount of money. Yeah.
Right. And then doing math live on TV. That's kind of hard.
You could have stopped at the first one. You don't need to keep mathing.
We get it.
I enjoyed Downey's acceptance speech because really it was him acknowledging his past. I mean, it's a redemption speech.
Yeah.
It's like, I've had this long, tortured existence, and now I'm back and I'm on top. And then he turns to his wife and points out that she's primarily responsible for it. And I thought it was a very sweet moment. I don't think people really grasp exactly what he was talking about as much as I did, simply because I've followed his career and followed his circumstances. I mean, he regularly goes and thanks this judge who threw him in prison. because he's like, if you wouldn't have done that, I probably would have died of an OD.
Yeah, it would have been a huge loss if he had not got his life turned around. And when he says it's his wife who keeps him in line, like, she has saved him in many, many, many ways, which is why she's always the first one that gets recognition for him having any kind of a career at this point.
Well, the veterinarian comment kind of struck me as odd until he brought it back around. And then I'm like, oh, okay, that's what you meant. But he is now the first and only SNL cast member to have an Academy Award.
Oh, wow.
Adam Sandler's still coming for one.
Today, an obscure trivia.
If I had to pull out a couple of speeches real quick, I'll say, I'm not going to go deep into Glazer, but I think that I was surprised that there was such a backlash. I just kind of caught it in the last couple hours. I mean, I guess I'm not surprised with the way social media is, but if there's anybody who's going to give a speech that has a little bit of heaviness to it, it's obviously going to be a guy who just made a really heavy movie and that, you know, kind of pushed, you know, talking about things that they're a little uncomfortable in this day and age. Yeah. So I didn't have a problem with Glazer saying what he said. I didn't find it hugely controversial at the time personally, but the other one that really I was happy to see was, I was so worried about Cillian Murphy, knowing how nervous he is, and he doesn't like to be, you know, in the spotlight on the stage. Even in some of the past speeches, he looked really uncomfortable up there. And I was like, okay, is he going to be able to like put himself together for this big one? I thought he did a really nice job. You could tell it mattered to him as, you know, sort of validation for a long, really strong career. So it was nice to see Cillian get up there and kind of feel comfortable in his skin when on this awards tour, he has not sort of looked to want to be in the spotlight.
So I also will point out Emma Stone's was very moving as well, just from her sheer reaction and the rawness of what she was kind of going through in that moment. I think it capped off exactly what I felt when her announcement was read. So to me, that was another a standout moment in the episode.
She genuinely looks surprised.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly.
She wanted Lily to win. Like, these two have bonded hard over this awards season. And I, like, nobody can fake that. Like, she gets really awkward in interviews. You can tell the difference between Emma Stone acting and Emma Stone being Emma Stone. And right. That was Emma Stone freaking out about her dress being broken and she couldn't think about anything else.
And I mean, with her level of power in Hollywood as a producer, it wouldn't surprise me if she cast Lily in something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, something prominent soon.
And did anyone else catch online today the group hug between the two of them and Sandra Hüller? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
no, I didn't see it.
It was, oh, yeah. They had a big group hug.
That's cool.
It was beautiful. Nice.
Yeah. So at least it's not too controversial where, you know, the Bette Davis days would come back.
No, the people who are mad about what happened last night are all of the people online just going, ah, she was robbed. She shouldn't have happened. You know, it's a voting game. Like, it's all about your publicists. They're not the ones out there campaigning. Your publicists, the producers, your people are the ones out there doing all the things to get you votes. That's how this works.
I have something I wanted to raise, which is, how many here think that the Academy basically was looking for an opportunity to give Wes Anderson an Academy so that they wouldn't have to deal with him again?
I mean, maybe to some extent.
They didn't have to deal with him last night.
Oh, yeah. Or Wes Anderson just thought, okay, maybe if I go over to this other category, they'll have to give one to me.
And he stacked the deck with like five shorts this
year.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. He's like, I don't want to make a whole movie. I'll make five little movies and then maybe I'll get double nominated.
And quite frankly, I can understand why it was given to him considering the cast and everything about it. But I thought Red, White, and Blue was by far the best live action short in the category.
That was the one I didn't get around to.
And these are the ones that are the biggest blind. These are the ones that are the biggest blind spots for us. Yeah. Just getting access to all the shorts and finding the time to get all of that. So I applaud everybody who's able to fit that many movies in. I know one guy here said he got through, I think, 49 of the nominated movies this year. I'm just like, wow, that's a lot of movies.
Okay, I think Tom got all of them by the end.
I got all 53.
Yes. Nice.
I don't know but I got all 53.
Yeah, what that guy we know got one of them that morning.
Yeah,
because it came to Netflix that day.
Yeah. Okay, that makes
39 for me.
36 for you.
36. Okay.
I would like to use this platform to like get on a soapbox and say, how have we not at this point, how has the Academy not found a way to release all of the live action shorts and the animated shorts on a website like a few days before so we can see these things? You know, like I understand like leaving them in theatrical places long enough to like let people purchase tickets to see them, but at some point you got to release them to the public.
They have the studio or the like Oscars Academy portal so that everybody who is an Academy member can watch it on a streaming service. So why don't you charge $15 for all the film bros and make a bunch of money for the shorts and all these other projects that wouldn't otherwise get stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my local independent theater has, my theater here in town has like a, you can buy a pass and see all of the particular category shorts or whatever. But if you're in a spot that's really rural where like you guys are at Betsy and Trent, I can't imagine it's easy to get like your local theater to do that. So, I don't know.
I think they have started showing them more recently. Same thing, the local kind of art theater, they had them this year. But it's always like, you know, the week of the Oscars. So it's down to the wire. Yeah. Like literally last year, Women Talking, we saw like 4 days before the Oscars. It took that long for one of the best picture nominees to get here. So I don't really bank on being able to see also all the documentaries and all the shorts. I appreciate they exist. I really 1 year want to try to get through them all, but you know.
Yeah, and Tom, to your point about if they have the infrastructure already set and you have the ability to take a payment for something, $5, you get so many other people going on there and number one, experiencing all the movies, and number two, getting the money distributed out to all of the different filmmakers so that maybe they're encouraged to do more.
Even if the big studios want to watch it again after it's over.
Yeah, totally.
Even if the big studios want to pull their stuff. So let's just take out most of the big best picture ones and leave like Neon and A24 will have some of their stuff. But just put like the documentaries and the shorts and whatever else. You can charge $15 and you'll make a bunch of money off of everybody who wants to actually go and pursue all of these things and won't have an otherwise opportunity to do so. And then put it back into investing in shorts or documentaries or animated features or whatever you want to do for these smaller films so they can actually be seen. Because the point of the Oscars is to promote movies. And if you don't get them into the hands of the public on the night that they're supposed to need them, what's the point of all of this?
Yeah, make a fund to just make a pool of money that you can apply for and have, you know, smaller filmmakers be able to get some of that money and make their own short movies.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
I think it will be improved as all of the major studios just get gobbled up by the tech giants, you know, because that's coming if it isn't already. I mean, I'm waiting for Sony to get bought by somebody. I'm waiting for Disney to get absorbed yet, although their stock price is up just slightly enough that they may avoid some of that. But it is coming where the tech giants will be our major studio distributors. But even in that universe, you got to get it out to the public in some capacity, even just the small ones. I can understand holding on to Oppenheimer until like 3 weeks before it because you wanted to have its theatrical run and then its re-release and all this other stuff, but get this into the hands of the public.
And like the Oppenheimer movie kind of went the same cycle as most movies do. Like they have a really long run in the theater. Then you have, like nowadays, it is the digital rental release, then it's digital purchase release, then digital rental, then the 4K, then the Blu-ray, then the DVD, and then it goes to streaming and everything else. That was kind of the standard way of doing things, but these days, that time period is very much shortened. Like some of these movies came out in, December, and they're already out on just regular streaming services. That window has really, really shrunk.
Right.
Well, it's just to the point where I started asking people that I know, friends and casual people, and the number of people who said, well, I think I saw Barbie or I saw Oppenheimer, and that's all I've seen.
Yep.
And they haven't seen any of the shorts. They haven't seen any of the animated. They haven't seen half or, 75% of the Best Picture nominees. And so it's just really disheartening because there's some good stuff here, but I don't know why it's becoming so difficult to get stuff out in certain venues, because I know for a fact, it's a joke, because I'm in the middle of central Wisconsin, and unless it has a car chase, an explosion,
gunfire, animated or horror, or it's probably not coming to Wisconsin Rapids.
Yes. And so I have to go up to two cities in the area that both have universities, and then they're there for a limited run. You might have a week where they'll be there. So
you
it's
come
just,
down by me.
Yeah.
Where I have access to just about everything.
I feel very spoiled right now listening to you all talk.
Oh, it's
hey, I'm in a university town. We mentioned women talking. I had a free screening like 4 months before it came out.
Awesome.
Thank you, University of Wisconsin. But anyway, so let's move into a couple of trivia questions, and we'll just start it off with who holds the record as of 2024 for most Oscar nominations with 59?
John Williams.
He is the oldest living recipient.
He also has a ton.
Or and the most. He has 54.
No, it's Walt Disney.
So more than John Williams?
Yes, gotta Walt Disney, Disney is correct.
Okay.
With 59. So another one. Who is the only actor to win two Oscars for the same part in the same year? Harold Russell, Barry Fitzgerald, or Teresa Wright?
I don't know the guy's name, but it's for... I know the movie. He was a World War II veteran.
She's got the right movie.
His hands, he has hooks instead of hands.
Yes, yeah, it's Harold Russell.
This is the best years of our lives.
It is correct.
But I don't know the actor.
Yeah. That's yes, it's Harold Russell. Yep.
And
so he was awarded a special honorary Oscar because they didn't think he would win supporting actor. And then he kind of accidentally won supporting actor as well. So he got two on the same night. Now, the reason I ask it with those three options in mind is Barry Fitzgerald also holds a unique distinction. He is the only person to be nominated for the same part in both supporting and best actor for Going
My
Way.
That I didn't know.
Okay.
Yes. So, and I'm named after Dana Andrews from that movie.
Not Going My Way. He means Best Years of Our Lives. Yeah.
Best Years of Our Lives.
All right. So let's switch course for a moment here, and we'll tackle our first Ask Dana Anything. So if you are not familiar with this and have not been following our social media campaign lately, we allowed people to submit anonymous questions via a source that Mr. Korns found for us. And first one up, how versed are you in bird law?
Not. I have no idea what the heck you're talking about.
I don't know what bird law is either. I'm sorry.
I have to enlighten you, I suppose.
Are we discussing the Buddy Hackett joke with the duck that lands in the farmer's field?
I doubt it.
Okay, so that would be the... I mean, if you'd like, I can tell the joke, but, you know...
We're on YouTube. Immediately people can just like pan over and get Buddy Hackett to tell that for them.
Yeah.
I don't think we're in a room with a lot of people who have seen It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, I'm guessing, by the...
I've seen part of it.
Okay.
Nope.
So there's a character on there. His name's Charlie Kelly. And he, anytime he gets in a debate with people, especially people in, you know, if it's ever a legal debate, he always brings up bird law. And he's well-versed in bird law, but he knows nothing about anything else that's a legal proceeding. And so it's this kind of long-standing joke with this popular show about bird law. And apparently... people were wondering if Dana took any bird law classes.
No, I don't. I missed that week in law school. So
I don't even know if bird law is a real thing or not. I assume it.
No, environmental
isn't?
Law is a thing, yeah. But I don't know about bird law.
Never heard of bird law. It sounds like
they prefer aviary law. Avian law.
I don't know. It sounds rather. Feathery to me, but okay.
All right, let's go to the second one. And knowing how you responded during our end of the year celebration on the Almanac live feed, what are your top three celebrity crushes?
Mine?
Yes.
Um, Oh boy. ScarJo.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Good choice.
I mean,
to quote Barney Stinson, ScarJo's got to have a lot of daddy issues if she's in that many Woody Allen films.
Oh, crazy.
Gosling.
We're getting to it.
No, that's okay. I mean,
I can respect how handsome and charismatic he is without wanting to, you know, procreate.
My wife and I were debating which one of us was going to leave the other for Gosling last night. So,
okay, well, we know where we're going with that segment.
Oh, I'm drawing a blank. Now she doesn't even act anymore. All she does is like run her baby or her diaper.
Are we talking Goop?
No.
Oh, you're thinking of Jessica Alba.
Jessica Alba. Yes.
That's a deep pull at this point.
Yeah, I know. And boy.
Well, let's give you a second to think about the
Barbara
third
Streisand.
One. And really?
Barbara I would have Streisand, not guessed right?
Babs. Okay.
Well, she, you know, she's still looking pretty good for almost 80. So, okay.
All right. Before I move on too much further here.
No. I'll change that. Dolly Parton.
All right.
I'm going to go older woman. I'm going to go Dolly.
Fair enough. All right. Then, Adam, have you actually joined the stream? Are you there? Because we can't see you. No?
Okay. Can you hear me? I don't know.
Interesting. All right. Now,
my internet is failing.
Oh, yes. Now we can hear you.
There he is.
Okay. Yeah. My internet is once again failing.
Yes, we can hear you.
Betsy and Trent, if you thought you were in a remote part of the country, my colleague has you beat.
Oh, yeah, I guarantee.
Yeah, we're not remote. We are quite urban, but.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So you came just in time as I'm about to ask Andrew about.
Okay. You tried to talk to him. He had to flee.
Now you see what I have to work with.
Live demo, folks. Live demo.
Oh, you got to love it. All right. So the moment we've been waiting for the last half an hour, as I mentioned to Mr. Corns, I think I might need a digital poncho for this one. But I described it last night as the best single performance of a song at the Oscars ever. Mr. Corns, I'm Just Ken.
Okay.
Take it away.
All right. I didn't think that anything could top last year. I was fully on board the RRR, Natu. I mean, I was jamming that thing for like 6 months, and I was ecstatic when those guys got to do that, you know, big show, song and dance and everything. So I was like, okay, I'm going to die a happy person. I got to see Natu. Then this year, Barbie drops. We get Gosling, who, as my co-host who has just joined, can attest to, I'm on the Gosling bandwagon. I've been there for a long time. I think he's just a ridiculously talented person, actor, everything about him. So when I saw I'm Just Ken get nominated, I was like, we have to get a Ryan Gosling performance. And of course we did, and he crushed it. Should be no surprise to anyone, really. I mean, he stole the show last night. He turned the place into a concert, really. And, you know, there were all sorts of like throwbacks to, you know, Marilyn Monroe and all these great moments throughout history. He's got Slash up there. Mark Ronson's on stage. He's got the crowd interacting. He has the little connection with Emma from La La Land there at the end. I mean, there's just so much in that performance. I think I watched it like 10 times at this point. It's just going to be on repeat for me for a long, long time. Had a blast.
Oh, it will now live rent-free in my head for the rest of time. Like, I have invested so much headspace to I'm Just Ken. I was literally this afternoon just, like, aimlessly wandering, muttering I'm Just Ken to myself. Why? I don't know. It's a part of me now. So last night...
Go ahead.
Last night, I'm waiting since all since last summer. I'm like, it has to be nominated for an Academy Award. And it did. He has to perform it at the Oscars. And then he does this. And I'm like, I can die happy now. It's exactly what I wanted.
My reaction to that whole thing is they did it. They pulled it off. And it was as big as they could possibly made it. I was a little worried that, okay, he agreed to do this really late in the process. Maybe they didn't have enough time to do it real big, but they did it. And we're all better for it.
Yeah, an article came out earlier today that said they've actually been planning it for months, kind of secretly and covertly.
I'm sure.
And, you know, he released like a Christmas version of I'm Just Ken.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's been working it for a while, so I was...
I'm like, yeah. The guy doesn't put out 4 remix versions at Christmas if he doesn't secretly want to do the Oscars. He's just a big tease is what he is.
And just the way it started with Margot laughing and then like even Billie Eilish right behind him was like cracking up. Like it could not have been more perfect. Perfect start to finish.
I disagree. Just there is one thing that could have made it more perfect. If we got Dance the Night Away right before it, if you put those back to back and had Dua Lipa do it and then do I'm Just Ken following it, now we're talking.
I mean, like, Dua should have been nominated too, but you can
hey,
only
Dua,
get what,
we're not going to nominate you, but hey, do you want to perform for us?
Right.
Like,
it wouldn't
monkey?
Be the first time they have had a song that was not nominated be performed at the Oscars because they were like, oops, we forgot about Bruno is really, really popular. Right. Let's make them sing it.
I do feel kind of bad for like John Batiste, who clearly got cut short and a couple of the other songs were cut short so we could give Gosling all this time, but like it was worth it.
Mm-hmm. They didn't need to go long. They were fine.
Just to show what I have to put up with, I had to explain in the middle of this who Slash was to your mother.
That's not surprising.
You know. And I'm older than her.
Okay, but so you know, she's always been out of touch with culture.
Yeah,
I thought Gosling was fantastic. He was great, and the theater kid in me was geeking out. And one subtle thing about his performance, because I watched it a few times today too, the thing that separates for me the great performers from like Pantheon performers is how they interact with the mic stand and what you do with the mic and mic stand. And it's a very quick moment in his performance, but the way he handles the mic stand in those like 10 seconds is unbelievable. And that
like
to
pro.
Me, yeah, because that can go very wrong. If you are not 100% prepared and 100% confident in what you're doing, you fuck up the mic stand, the show is over. So
it's like that kid was on the Mickey Mouse Club or something.
I think it's a Canadian influence in part. I mean, I think, you know,
showman.
Yes. I think between he and Ryan Reynolds, the two of them both being Canadian, it's got to be in the water.
I saw something today that said Justin Timberlake in this moment is very grateful that Ryan Gosling chose acting over performing.
Yeah, I finally converted you, Adam. I think at this point now you're fully Team Gosling.
Well, no, not Gosling over Cooper. Not Team Gosling over Cooper, but I am fully on the Gosling train that he is amazing.
Okay, that raises something that I wanted to talk about, or at some point I want to talk about Cooper. And
I want to talk about Cooper too.
Okay, well,
let's wait till I'm gone.
Let me get to it with just one slight aside. I thought one of the better moments of last night happened after the Oscars. When Cooper did a cameo on Abbott Elementary and did his Rocket voice in like live action. I thought that was great. But anyway, all right, now let you take away your Cooper takes and whatever else you want to add here. All right.
At what point in time does Bradley turn to mom and go, "You're just bad luck"? Because he keeps getting shut out. And, you know, I could just picture Cooper being such that he'd go, "Well, it's not my fault, so it must be you, Mom."
Take a hike.
Yikes. Tough.
Yeah.
I think how they treat Bradley Cooper is sickening. And last night I was sickened. This guy works so hard and is such a goddamn good actor, and he doesn't need to win. That's fine if he doesn't win. But they trot him out there every year. They put him front and center because they know he's one of the biggest stars they have, and they know they're going to get something out of him. But they just refuse to recognize him. And not only that, they make fun of him for wanting to be recognized. I think it was so exploitative last night and sickening. Hey, sit down right in front so we can have a star in the screen at all times. But, you know, you don't get to win, though. Like, you don't get anything out of us. We just get it out of you.
He's getting the full Leo treatment right now. Like, Leo had to go through that thing for like a decade where he was front and center every time. You thought he was going to get the win. Never happened for way too long.
How about Hitchcock? I mean, after he wins it for his first American film, he goes on forever. So, you know, it's just going to be Brad's got his whole, you know, Lifetime Achievement Award Oscar sitting and waiting for him at some point in time.
That would piss me off. He better not win that.
I said to somebody last night, they always say, oh, you know, this is their second win after there are this many nominations. By the time he gets one, it's like, this is Bradley's first win and his 73rd nomination.
Well, he's going to have to go some to beat Glenn Close.
Yeah.
I think she's only been nominated 8 now that I know about it.
Well, 7 one or short 8, of yeah. Susan Lucci.
Well, that was like Emmy. 49 or something.
Yeah.
That was just asinine.
Well, he's 0 for 12 now. So. He's
but Diane Warren's 15 and 0 and or 0 and 15, excuse me, and she's shown up to every single one of those. So, if we're really going to talk about somebody being discredited, boy,
she's not sitting
know.
Front and center in every shot of the show.
That's because I don't know what she actually looks like. I still don't
I
know what
she looks
like. I can
promise you Diane Warren is not front and center at the Oscars. I feel confident.
Did you see
that.
A woman wearing a flame coat yesterday? Then you saw her.
Okay. I don't remember that at all. It yeah, might
during,
have happened. But,
during
you know.
the Cheetos song, they showed her in the audience.
Ah, great song, well, I mean, way. That makes. Yeah, I actually liked the
no,
song.
It was not.
You know, but okay. All right.
I have a friend who has a very big beef with Diane Warren. They're like, she could write a song about turd and they will nominate it for an Oscar at this point.
That's how it felt like with John Williams getting the nom yeah. for Indiana Jones. Yeah. I was like, come on now, you know, you're just giving it to him.
It's the same stuff.
They're trying to catch him up to Walt Disney.
Right.
Wait, quick,
give him another one. Give him another one before he croaks.
Well, I mean, he was specifically isolating himself for months so that he could attend the Oscars. He was so afraid of getting anything else. He did not attend any precursor events except the Oscars itself. He didn't go to the luncheon. He didn't do anything else. He wanted to preserve his possibility to show up at the Oscars because he knows he has to be out there. And I commend him for that. But to switch notes here so that Adam's a little less hot takey and a little bit more supportive.
No, no,
let's go to his now current favorite movie of all time.
Going from John Williams to switching notes? Come on.
Hey, don't like my transitions? Then you host. Anyway, if Dune 2 had been released in October as it was supposed to be, how would the Oscars have been different?
You want this to be less hot takey?
I want it to be less negative and a little bit more, I really loved something and let me campaign for it already.
I don't think Dune would win like anything, to be honest.
I think it's another kind of Lord of the Rings situation where we won't get a sweep of any kind for Dune until Messiah comes out. Because Dune won a bunch of technical awards, part one, yep. But it did not win Best Picture, even though it's an incredible movie.
We said the same thing about the In the Spider-Verse movies.
Yeah.
That one isn't going to win anything until the final one.
Except it won for the first one.
Did it really?
Yeah, but that it one won was Best more Animated of a, in 17.
Yeah, that one was more of a standalone story. This one ends at such a cliffhanger where it's designed to be a continuation.
They didn't know it was going to be such a hit.
Yeah.
I don't think Into the Spider-Verse got Best Picture nominated, unless I'm mistaken.
No.
No, it didn't get Best Picture nominated.
The third one will get Best Picture nominated. I feel pretty confident about that.
Yeah,
but let's hope so. I also think that it's more likely that Spider-Man 3, well, Spider-Verse 3, I suppose I should say, because there is a Spider-Man 3 that's disappointing, but that has more opportunity for me to actually pay off than the expectations we're going to have for Dune 3, because as we've noted for any of the book fans, Messiah is not nearly as engaging of a story as the original book. It starts
to
decline for most people, and I just have a hard time thinking that he's going to hit quite the same highs that he did out of this one when we have a much more complex Godfather Part 2 type character in the lead where Timmy's got to, see that.
I just don't think it would be Oppenheimer. I think it would, you know, another year it could win this year. I just don't think it would have beaten Oppenheimer because of Nolan.
It would have maybe snaked away some technical awards.
Well, I'm just even thinking Oppenheimer's been the front runner for 8 months without any hiccup at all. And the only thing that it really lost in the end was one of the screenplay awards where they're like, well, we can't give it to Nolan 3 times. Yeah, but sound was kind of deserved. Like, I can understand that one. But Downey was basically the favorite throughout. Murphy was running head-to-head with Giamatti and ended up pulling out at the end. Nolan's been basically best director for 8 months, and Oppenheimer was basically the front runner for best picture for 8 months. At least if Dune had come out, I think there would have been a much bigger conversation, and I think the ratings would have been even higher.
Well, yeah. I mean, maybe Dune wins cinematography, maybe, but not much else.
I think maybe it wins visual effects is probably the only way it's getting an Oscar this year, but I think it was actually pretty smart of them to postpone Dune a little bit. Obviously, the release window is not the greatest in terms of people's, you know, people don't like to remember things that happened 9 months ago when we get around to next Oscar cycle or whatever. So I don't love Dune 2's chances of winning Best Picture as much as I think it's a really great movie. But unlike Return of the King, which sort of kind of like continued the trajectory of, it didn't like do anything super disruptive into the terms of the story, Dune Messiah is really freaking weird. And it gets really kind of, people are not going to be happy with the end result of the story arc for some of these characters. And I think it's going to be a little too polarizing and divisive for some people. So I don't know if Dune Messiah is going to be the Return of the King and like sweep everything, because it's going to piss some people off. So I'm actually kind of hoping Dune 2 gets some love this year.
I have faith in Denny.
Oh, me too, for sure.
And I think Warner is going to be pushing that one hard. Because I don't know how much on the rest of their schedule they're going to have to really nominate for something.
Beetlejuice? Get out of here.
Yeah, well, okay.
Denny's going to... I think he's going to get his due for either Cleopatra, which he's going to be doing in the next couple of films.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people love Cleopatra and that kind of style of film. And if Denis Villeneuve's doing it, it's going to be pretty epic. So I think he's going to get some nominations there. He's doing this other science fiction film called Rendezvous with Rama, which is a really big, heady thing, kind of space odyssey-like. So I think Denis is going to get his love in other areas, and Dune, unfortunately, is probably going to get passed over a little bit.
Who do they have? They have anybody cast for Cleopatra yet?
No, I don't even think he's really gotten too far into the script writing.
I thought it was maybe Zendaya. I think it's Zendaya.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. That makes sense.
Are you checking this?
Body shape and figure and ethnicity. Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know when it comes out, but...
All right, another trivia question here. What film won the most Oscars without winning Best Picture?
Do we
Star
get
Wars,
choice?
The King and I, or Cabaret?
I mean, Star Wars probably didn't win Best Picture, but I don't know if it won a ton of other awards.
I don't feel like Star Wars got a lot of technical love at the time. Maybe I could be way wrong.
They didn't have a lot of technical awards back then.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Cabaret.
It's Cabaret.
Cabaret won 10 without winning Best Picture. It even won director away from Coppola, but The Godfather won Best Picture. In my opinion, the right choice, but because life is not a cabaret. It's just not. All right. Who received a Best Actor nomination for portraying a person who was also nominated for Best Actor? Tom Cruise, Robert Downey Jr., or Dustin Hoffman?
Robert Downey Jr.
Robbie Downey Jr.
For Chaplin. So, all right. We have another Ask Dana Anything here.
Okay.
you love these, apparently. Yeah. Which torture method would work better on you? A marathon of Pauly Shore or Tom Green movies?
Oh,
Pauly Shore, definitely. At least Tom Green is just plain, at times, boring. Pauly Shore is just greeting. I mean, he is the most untalented waste of humanity. If his mother didn't run the freaking comedy shop, he would have absolutely no career. He would be cleaning toilets in some casino someplace.
Thank you for speaking the truth.
I'm going to make Trent watch Son-in-Law someday, because guess what? It takes place in South Dakota, which is where we live, and it is full of mistakes. It is not at all. It's not right.
I almost last year, for our bad movie bet for the Oscars, chose either Biodome or Encino Man for him, just knowing how bad he would take either one of those. It didn't end up winning for me, so it doesn't really matter. I think I ended up choosing Freddy Got Fingered. Thinking Tom Green would be just awful for him. But speaking of the bad movie bet, Dad, can I take my victory lap now?
Yeah, well, you've kind of had to walk in shame for the last 2 years, so go ahead.
Not this year. Not this year, my friend. Oh, it was sweet. I audibly leapt out of my seat that I didn't have to watch a Nicolas Cage movie and Left Behind. Because he could present a great Oscar, but he can't act for shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what great choice do you have to partake in this year for content on our feed?
I don't even remember because I had so...
Oh, come on.
I had so thought that this was not going to happen again. So I didn't pay attention.
When the first one was read out, I'm like, okay, I just need one more. And then the second one went for you, and I'm like, I'm going to lose again? No. The swing of emotions was high. But anyway, it is a movie called Simon Says, starring Dennis Rodman and Dane Cook.
I have never seen that movie.
Oh, it's an never action thriller from like 2002, I think. That takes place God. In Paris.
Nothing says action thriller like Dane Cook and Dennis Rodman.
Dennis Rodman.
Oh, I think it's on like Tubi. So yeah. Oh, that's going to be priceless.
Where it belongs.
Are we going to get a Dana live reaction? Like, are you going to watch it? You know?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
He's going to do it. The whole point of the bad movie bet is not only that he has to watch it, he has to do an entire episode of G-Mode. In the style of the show, reviewing that movie.
Is that how The Room came up, or was that separate?
No, that was just kind of like a joke one. We had somebody who had written a book on it, or a book of essays, and so we did it as kind of an extra aside. So that one is actually featured on the list. But the two that I have done, Glenn or Glenda and Batman and Robin with the bat nipples, those did not feature on the list. Those are separate additional special episodes that I put out where I had to go on for a half an hour complaining about all the things that were wrong with both of them.
Batman and Robin is a trash masterpiece, and I love it.
It's a Batman so offensive and so historian,
that's why I love it. It's terrible, but I love Uma Thurman, and so I'm here for it.
And speaking of that movie and Batman and everything, God, it was awesome seeing Arnold and Danny and Michael Keaton and all them yesterday.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that was a great moment. And the stare down, oh, just priceless.
The way Michael Keaton just turns Batman face on anytime he needs to.
I mean, Keaton is not my Batman, but more Keaton. Just anytime more Keaton. I'm down for it. So, all right. I think Andrew's going to be pretty close to having to leave us. So before he does, I'd like to just allow you guys some space, share what you guys have going on Rev Almanac.
Do we have anything going on, Adam? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we just have the 1954 pod came out. Good episode. Did I want to die watching movies that old? We'll see. You got to listen to find out.
It was a good episode. It was definitely a good episode. some very surprising picks from a few people, mostly your guests.
Yes. Yeah. So we had an award-winning author, VP Morris. She was awesome. Just got done recording our fourth episode with Grant over at Best Picture Cast. It's going to be on the year 2011. The artist famously won that year. You'll have to find out start of April if Adam and I and Grant thought The Artist deserved the win. We'll find out. And then we've also got 1981 coming up, Chariots of Fire. We've got 2005, the infamous crash year coming up. That one's going to be a train wreck. And then our big July episode is going to be a special one where we've actually got three guests on as opposed to one. We're going to be doing 1994, which is Shawshank Redemption, Pulp Fiction, Forrest Gump. Definitely a contentious episode.
Banger.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got the entire 1001 by one crew. So Joey, Britt, and Adam St. John over there. So a lot of good stuff coming on Rev Almanac.
I'm surprised you didn't have another like Weinstein movie just queued up for the next episode.
God, that was just a total accident and coincidence that we had three out of four of our first episodes Weinstein. It wasn't planned.
We know what your priorities are. It's okay.
Yeah, we're about to get to some really crazy stuff because I don't want to tip my hand, but Adam, I think he's going to find that 1981 is a crazy ass year of wild films. And so we'll see what he thinks about that in about a month.
What is your scale for that one? It's like Reagan conservatism and the other side is like, what? I can't remember.
Yeah. So I've already watched like 50 movies from 1981 and I figured that, yeah. So basically there's a giant spectrum of everything's either incredibly Reagan era conservative, kind of going to that demographic, or it's like the start of the cocaine fueled batshit crazy era. And so the movies are all, I've got a spectrum made up. I've got all the posters. And so you're going to find out where all the movies landed for me on that wild spectrum. But yeah, 1981 is pretty crazy.
I've got some tricks up my sleeve for that one. I'm going to surprise
you. Do.
My two favorite movies would surprise you. Both of you, I think, would surprise you. My two favorite movies of that year. So
I do believe that I'm probably the only one who remembers 1981 that's in this room right now.
I doubt it.
Barely. 84 and 85 for us.
Yeah. 85. Like
we weren't around for it, but we are aware it existed.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Kind of like the, you know, yeah. There's lots of things that existed that you don't want to remember. And 1981 was one for me. So anyway, having been through that era, you guys, I don't know if you could really understand exactly what it was.
No, but we can try and capture it the best that we can. It's not like living right now is any real treat either.
And really quickly, Betsy, Trent, if we ever are able to get you on the Rev Almanac show with us in the future, I hope that you both pick a year way back in time just to really make Adam twist and turn. And, you know, he hates old movies, so pick something
Define
way back.
Old movie. If you tell me 1997, I'm going to reach to the computer and slap you.
No.
Adam.
Anything before 1980 is old to me.
Yeah.
So.
How would you define what's classic Disney to you?
Classic Disney is like the late, you know, it's like Lion King, you know, it's the night, it's the okay. It's the mid to late 90s Disney movies. Yeah, that's classic.
That's literally the stuff I went to birthday parties for.
So that's where we're at with that. So, yeah.
I mean,
We're about to cover a 1975 Disney movie for our other show.
Yeah, we'll have to pick something in the 70s because you might be surprised. We've been finding this is the decade that is the biggest blind spot for us.
Yeah.
And some of them are incredible, like genuinely yeah. incredible movies that we have been overlooking our entire lives. And we're like, what is wrong with us?
Have you guys heard about this movie called Rocky? It's really great.
So
I don't know Adam, how we're going to do our top 1970s episode in a few months. It's going
to
be nuts.
I have to ask this question. Do you have the beard to prove you can shave? Because you're just such a child at times.
I think it's more of a not wanting to shave, more of a laziness
okay.
aspect.
All right.
I am young. I mean, I was born in the December of 95. So, you know.
Yeah,
oh he's a god.
We're talking 20 years before I was born. Movies. I mean, yeah, that's kind of old.
And if you shave your beard, you turn like 12 years old, right?
Very.
Yeah, young. He's so young. He's not even a millennial.
Very. Yeah. Well, I am a millennial, but
only barely.
I still have shirts in my closet older than you.
I'm sure you do.
I think you need to clean out your closet. That's just not good. Oh man.
I'm sure I have stuff older than me. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
So, Andrew, if you need to go, you can be excused at any time. I just wanted to get some of that in there. And we look forward to any of your upcoming episodes. I know you're on two times with us this coming year. So good to have you. Your first time officially on the main feed.
Yes. Thanks so much. Good seeing you guys. Betsy, Trent, pleasure meeting you face to face. And we'll keep up on social media for sure.
Yeah, good to meet you.
All right. See ya.
Hey, all right. So one of my next big projects here, I put out an annual Oscars Best Picture rankings, and I add the one that just won Best Picture. So I will publish that live right now. And for anybody that is either watching the stream or watching this afterwards, it is available on ronnieduncanstudios.com/gmotepodcast. And I have a new overall number one, which I don't think will surprise my dad, but until I started really thinking about it, it wouldn't have been one that I had necessarily number one. It was my number three last year, but it has leapt to the top. And that is Schindler's List. I have that as my new overall number one.
Nice.
I also divided them into separate categories this year for the first time. Usually I had just ranked them one to, I guess, now 97. I recognize that there were two Oscar winners the first year for Best Picture, and I don't care if no one else does. I do, so that means there are 97, not 96. But first category is the all-time classics. I have 15 in that category, and we've covered a bunch of them already on Gmote, but we should be through them, or for the majority, except for two of them, by the end of next season. The next section is great movies, which has 16 to 28. I have my personal favorites, which is probably the longest section on the list. Probably ones that in most people's list would not be this high, but they are on mine. I have 29 to 52. Then I have aggressively fine, to borrow a term from one Joey R. from Best Picture Cast, describing Naiad, 53 to 67. Then I have The Bad, 68 to 78. I have Dull and Bloated, 79 to 92. And the last five ranked films on the list, I couldn't call them like dull or boring or bloated or anything else. It was because they actively anger me. There are five Best Picture winners out there that actively anger me when I watch them. And I have had the same last film on my list for all the years that I've been putting this out. So three straight years, all the King's Men has been absolutely dead last. Broderick Crawford in that one, just, it annoys me to no end. But any other guesses on what else is in the bottom five there?
Everything Ever All at Once.
No, that was my pick to win last year. So that falls in
greatest
my personal
show
favorites.
On Earth.
No, The Greatest Show on Earth just barely misses it. It's Dull and Bloated. It's at 92.
Crash?
Nope. Crash got into The Bad, I believe. Yes, it's number 78.
Tom Jones?
Tom Jones is in there at number 95. We also had Cavalcade, Chariots of Fire, and Cimarron.
Oh, Cimarron.
Yeah, most Cimarron is my second
film
to last.
I've ever watched.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So, but you can check that out there live. Any other thoughts or questions? For what it's worth, more recent winners to be on the list, I already have Parasite in the all-time classics. So that's in the top 15. It is the most recent film to be that high. I have Moonlight at number 18. I have Oppenheimer, maybe with some recency bias, at number 19 starting out right now. And I think the next closest one are in the personal favorites category. I have The Departed at 29, Spotlight at 30, Lord of the Rings at 31, and Everything Everywhere All at Once at 34. I know Adam just definitely will not agree with me on that one, but that's why it's in the personal favorites category.
Everything's stupid. All the never friggin' sucks. That's what that is.
You just don't like hot dog fingers. I don't get it.
No, the butt plug movie should not have won Best Picture. No.
But that's how you really feel.
Driveway Dolls looking great based on the criteria of Everything Ever All at Once. Driveway Dolls, my pick to win this year's Best Picture. It's got a lot of all butt right. plugs in that fucking stupid film, too.
All right. We ready for our last Ask Dana Anything?
Okay.
Again, this was asked anonymously, so I have no idea who this is from. When are we going to see each other again? It's been so long.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Oh, so, I enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see here. What's another good one? For which movie did Steven Spielberg receive his first Best Director nomination? Jaws, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, or Raiders of the Lost Ark?
I said Close Encounters.
Close.
Anyone else?
Jaws.
He famously was not nominated for Jaws in 75. In the year where we had, yeah, I know it's supposed to be a trick question, but Close Encounters was his first actual nomination. All right. Then let's see here. We'll find something else. For which movie did Henry Mancini not win an Oscar for Best Original Song? and these are all from consecutive years in the 60s. Charade, The Days of Wine and Roses, or Breakfast at Tiffany's?
Breakfast.
What was the first one?
Charade.
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 One of her favorite movies.
Adam?
The other one, not Charade or Breakfast.
He's going to go with the Days of Wine and Roses, just to be different.
Never heard of
Dad, how did you not get Moon River won Best Original Song?
I just thought it was too obvious.
Oh, no, it is Charade.
It was.
Yeah, that's literally one of my favorite movies of all time, so I better have gotten that right.
The best Hitchcock film not made by Hitchcock.
Yes, it is, exactly.
Walter Matthau was the heavy.
At the 2015 Oscars, I guess it's 2016, I don't remember. While introducing Idina Menzel for Let It Go, what did John Travolta mistakenly
Adele
say?
Adele Dazeem.
All right.
Adele Dazeem.
All right. So any other major reactions to the show? I'm kind of running out of topics here.
I love that my generation has just kept the John Cena you can't see me thing for over 20 years now. And we're just never going to let the joke die. That was the first meme I saw was, why is the envelope floating in midair on the stage?
And it makes me, the show.
Yeah. It just makes me really happy that we are just never going to stop that joke. It really tickles my heart.
He will be an old man in a wheelchair and everyone will be like, where is he? I don't see him.
That's great. I love it.
What I did not appreciate was the tease of the stunt performers and stunt coordinators not being, it wasn't announced that there's going to be a category for them this year. Like, come on, don't even bring it up if you're not going to have a category.
See, I think that's them actively campaigning for that to be a category.
They should be. Yeah.
Because they started it off by saying that casting was going to be a new category, and then they started to go into the stunt work, which everybody's been pushing for as the thing for, I don't know, at least 10 years, so if not more. And it should be in there. But I would also say, how do you divide that? Is it best stunt coordinator? Is it best individual stunt work? I mean,
I'm sure it's going to be coordinator.
It'll be coordinator, and then it'll be built out from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do they have their own guild? Because usually that's how you end up with getting a nomination or something else, because
I think
each branch has to nominate it. The few categories where that doesn't apply is like best international feature, and I think like best animated short or something to that extent. I know that they are dividing the branches between animated short and animated feature next year, which is kind of weird for me, but yeah, okay. So, but otherwise,
I just have one. Kimmel. I have seen so many backlash. People who loved him, people who absolutely hated him, and I don't know. I'm kind of curious as to how everyone else felt as far as him as host.
He's fine. Like,
he's inoffensive.
Yeah, I think there were some jokes that I didn't laugh at. There were other jokes that I was like, haha, yeah, he's okay. It's funny, but yeah. Of the ones they've had recently, he's definitely one of the better ones.
Yeah, a good host is one that doesn't get in the way. He just kind of lets everything go and moves people along.
He's definitely the safe choice. Like, I think they could be much more audacious with their choices, and we've discussed, Adam and Andrew and I have discussed other possible hosts that we think could be better and actually do something that's a little bit more memorable. Something a little bit more edgy, not Ricky Gervais, like where you're just trying to burn the whole thing down, but somebody who could actually like be more reflective of a younger audience and trying to bring them into the Oscars. Like,
how about John Mulaney?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's where Adam was going to go with his. I was going to lead into him, but I don't know. I think Kimmel's fine. I laughed at a lot of his stuff. I don't find him to be taking up or chewing a lot of scenery. I thought his monologue was fine. They had some good bits, but at the end, he's just kind of the safe pick. But, you know, he's still going to necessitate the mean tweet or mean, what is it, truth near the end.
Yeah.
Well, and that was the question I had, which is, why would you bring Mulaney out at that point in time, if not for the fact that you're thinking about him as a future host?
Yeah, it was his audition. I mean, I would bet my life he's going to host the Oscars next year.
He was given a really long segment there too. Longer than any other like intro to a category guy.
Well, how long do you need to explain the plot of an entire movie?
I just came from doing a pod with Kieran over at Best Picture Cast. Go check him out. And we did a winners and losers draft of last night. And I had John Mulaney as both a winner and a loser. I think he's a winner because everyone wants him to host the Oscars next year. And he's a loser because everyone wants him to host the Oscars next year.
Yeah.
And he's going to feel the pressure of like, everyone wants me to do this. And it's a great honor. And I'm sure he probably wants to do it, but he's going to have to do that. Kimmel, I like Kimmel a lot. I thought he was funny. People just made up their mind before, as soon as he was named host, they decided he wasn't going to be good. So I don't, but I think the only jokes that I didn't like were the RDJ jokes, the drug things. I think that type of stuff should be,
yeah.
I think that should only, those jokes should be made if RDJ makes them, like if the person that they're about with stuff like that makes them, then I think they're totally fair game, but I don't love going after people for that. But also, at the same time, whatever.
Also with that, if you're going to be trying to court a very younger audience, that younger audience who only knows Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man has no idea of what his past is. So the jokes just go over their head.
True. But yeah, I mean, the forwarding your mail during Killers of the Flower Moon, I almost fell off the chair laughing. That was so funny. Oh my God. I thought he was good.
Yeah. I didn't mind it, but again, I'd like Mulaney. I think I'd suggested Gaffigan could be a really good host because he'd be quirky and a little bit different, not necessarily edgy. I think Bill Burr could be a very good host, even though he burned the place down.
Yeah, no.
That would be the last Oscar ceremony there is if Bill Burr is hosting.
Oh, no. Seth MacFarlane, for all the things that he did, we saw your boobs, and that didn't burn the Oscars down?
If he hosts as Ted, that is a fucking show. That I'm gonna
animated
watch.
Bear with a bow tie. That's all you see of him.
Yeah, it wouldn't happen unless Universal got the rights to the Oscars. Right now they're at Disney, so that's not unbelievable.
Give it like a year. They'll all buy each other out. It'll be fine. They'll figure it out.
All those comedians though would be better hosts, like funny wise. Obviously, I think Kimmel's a very good host to like hosting a show, but I agree that like Mulaney would be much better, just ratings wise.
And what he did at the Governor's Award, I think, was like highly entertaining. Probably a better monologue just overall. But I think he also didn't have to fill quite as much space, and he could focus or narrow his focus a lot more on the three recipients for the Governor's Ball than what Kimmel was doing, where he's got to like crowd work a little bit. So it's a tougher job, and I don't think he's going to have a problem doing it. And given the demographics that they're moving into, they have to move off of Kimmel. I don't think he wants to do it again. Four times, I think two was enough for him, but after the slap, they needed somebody with some like consistency, and the safe choice was the guy to go with. Now you have to transition it into somebody else. I think we've got a couple of Oscars past the slap, so we can kind of move on a little bit and be a little bit more edgy without people feeling like somebody's going to walk up on stage and punch them.
I was kind of sorry that he didn't carry on last year's joke, which is at the end, have the tally. So now he goes two, because last year was like years without major calamity, and it, you know, he put the one down.
Well, we're probably counting off stage. So
yeah, and then I'm like two.
He should have erased it.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean,
hell, that does not seem well.
Well, I had to explain, that was another thing I had to explain to your mother about, which is when they're making the joke about, well, Al Pacino's here, he was able to get a babysitter, and I'm like, huh? And I'm like, well, Al Pacino's involved in a big paternity action right now. Who would have sex with him right now?
Yeah.
Well,
I'm sure a lot of people. He's Al Pacino. I'm sure a lot of people.
I think the exactly Oscars needs to get away from getting all of the extremely geriatric stars to come out to present the final award, because, hey, there was that one year where, who was it?
Warren Beatty. Oh,
that screwed it
the
up.
The La La Land thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway.
I made the suggestion, instead of 50-year anniversaries, do it 25. So next year, have Russell Crowe do it for Gladiator.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it's at least like within living memory of people who are actually watching the show.
I did enjoy, though, the whole thing with, you know, the multiple best actor nominees. And
yeah.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah, they brought that back, which is why they probably needed the extra hour. But, you know, I like that format. It's a nice way to remind you that this is a tribute to movies, and these are all people who love movies and also have been honored at this event.
Yep. And also, this is actors voting for other actors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wished we would have gotten a little bit more like clip packages with some of that,
yes,
especially because we actually ended on time for once, but you know, okay.
Way early. It was less than 3.5 hours. Usually it's 4.
Do we think that Pacino just skipped a final clip package and just opened the envelope and said, let's go home?
No,
actually that was getting passed around on Variety, and Corns had texted that to us that they intentionally cut short reading the actual nominees because they thought they were going to run over time. So
well, they play them throughout the whole night.
They do the same thing with songs. Supposed to open the envelope.
Yeah, I don't blame him for that. I blame him for being an idiot and, fucking up the only words you have to say. The Oscar goes to. It's not hard. It's four
words.
They
need to bring back the winner is. I'm sorry. It's
someone
tough.
Did it. Somebody presented an award, and I distinctly heard someone say, the winner is.
Mm.
I don't know who it was. I can't remember, but...
Because the Oscar goes to is a vestige from what is supposedly the most disastrous Oscars of all time from 89. That was something they changed because they didn't want to be too controversial with the winner as opposed to the Oscar.
I think after Will Smith, that's out the window.
Yeah, I
don't think that story...
The part that I thought was the worst part of the entire evening was the in memoriam. I was
terrible.
A section we do on each one of our shows where we recognize all of it, to pull down the five person or the five like screen things, pillars or whatever it is, and show a few of them just like really quickly, and then end on that just like word cloud of names, I thought was offensive. I can understand giving a little bit more clout and maybe like a scene to each one of the people that like we're actually going to recognize and know what their work is. But you're supposed to be recognizing these people for their contributions to the industry as a whole over many years. And okay, if only the people in the room know who this person is, fine. But give them their 10 seconds of notoriety for all the work that they did to build this stupid industry.
And their
and
families.
And instead we get some weird dance number with the Step Brothers song. It didn't work.
It's not just them. It's their families. Because the families at times had to make sacrifices for the work they were doing because they were gone long hours or they were on set and whatever. And for days, weeks, months, you know, and so this is an opportunity for you to honor their memory and to honor their families. And you can't even get that right. It just seems like it gets worse year after year.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't feel like it should be that hard. And they had been getting it right. So why continue to reinvent the wheel?
Because it's a different producer every single year and everybody thinks their idea is better.
Yes.
And, you know, it could be a reaction to, hey, you forgot this person, you forgot this person.
It's always that.
This person didn't get that much time. And I can see it either way. But I can also see how, you're kind of cheapening these people's careers.
Their memory.
Yeah.
On a similar note, how did they miss the Saltburn joke when John Cena was naked? What are they doing? How did we not have a Murder on the Dance Floor song maybe over the speakers? Maybe John Cena says, I'm not Barry Keoghan. I don't know what you want from me. Something. What are we doing? Who is writing these jokes that didn't have that?
Kimmel could have made that joke.
Yeah. Like, what are we doing? Yeah.
And I'm sure that it would have been on like a rotation of jokes. So I can't understand why that wasn't at least something that they could have written in advance and put in a roulette wheel, essentially. I do have to say a little bit of a spoiler warning for that one because Dana has yet to see it, partially because I'm like, Dad,
Dana,
maybe this isn't the film for you.
Yes, it is. Come on.
Yes, he didn't like Poor Things. It's the most viral movie of the year.
Well, okay. Well, I hated Poor Things. This is no Poor Things.
We also haven't seen it, but I also understand exactly what you're talking about because I am on the internet and I'm not stupid. Like I know what happens in Saltburn.
And we're not that sensitive about spoilers.
No.
Other than Barbenheimer, Saltburn has got to be the most talked about movie online, I think, this year.
Yeah,
it's divisive, Madam Web. And you know what? I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Madam Web got, what, 3 jokes last night?
Well, that's not last year.
At least 2, yeah.
Yes, Madam Web took some drive-bys. That was bad. And by Spider-Ham, too. I don't know how that's going to work. He's in the next big Sony movie, so that's kind of weird. But
when the worlds collide, it's going to get awkward.
Dana, I'll watch Saltburn with you. We can do a reaction. I'll do a live watch-along with you for Saltburn, if you'd like.
If you want to really have fun,
I'll fly out to Wisconsin. I don't give a shit. I'll watch it with you.
No, if you really want to have fun, we can have my wife sit in with us.
Oh God,
more the merrier. I don't care. She's not my mom. I don't care.
She'd be getting up about 15 minutes in, going, I don't know what this shit is.
Oh no! It doesn't really get like weird until about halfway through. When it gets to the vampires,
give it at least 45 minutes.
yeah. The 45 minutes you'll need because it doesn't get weird until the vampire scene, and then it gets off the rails.
It goes off the rails the last 10 minutes. It's like, what is happening?
When I watched everything last year with her, every 10 minutes it was her getting up and going, I'm not going to finish watching this. I said, fine.
Same.
And then she's like, No, I've already got this much time in it. I'll sit through it. And then she'd sit, and then about 10 minutes later, same thing. And then the entire film was like that. And I'm like, I told you not to watch it with me. I was just going to watch it. Well, I wanted to watch it. Okay, fine.
It's not hard to know why she didn't necessarily receive the movie well. It's about a mother who is somewhat emotionally manipulative coming to terms with the fact that they're emotionally manipulative.
Oh, okay.
I am forcing
myself from that. I am not getting there. So as we have members of our office staff who are listening to this show on a regular basis now, and friends of friends, I am not going to protect you on that one.
Oh, that's fine, because she doesn't listen to the show anyway. But Adam, if you do come out to Wisconsin, you do have a place to stay. So there's that.
Perfect. Always looking for a place to stay.
I will have to stack up on red Gatorade, though.
True.
Well, if you want to come up to North Central, I got plenty of bedrooms. And if my in-laws are back, I'll put you down in the bedroom next to them, because I'm sure you and my father-in-law would really hit it off.
Sarcasm?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you and my grandfather have very much similar get off my lawn energy.
Oh, well, I mean, Dana, I don't get along with your son either, so I guess we're off to
Well, he's half his grandfather and half my father. So yeah, he's kind of half of both.
As he's described me, I am the worst part of both of my grandfathers. So anyway, that's out there as well.
Genetics, yeah. Folks.
I don't know what part I am of my father, so we'll see. I don't know.
So, Adam, not to steal something completely from your show, but you do predictions for the following year.
Oh,
do you have one that you didn't do on your program that you'd like to share, or maybe like a last one on the list?
That I didn't do on my program. So you want something different than Coleman Domingo and Sing Sing?
Sure. I just don't want to steal your thunder because I want to direct people to your show and I don't want to undercut you.
That's a very small part. If people are going to my show just for that, you're going to be probably disappointed because it's about 10 seconds long. Coleman Domingo for Sing Sing is my big prediction for next year for Best Actor. A different one, Bong Joon-ho is always, I don't think he's going to stay in January. I think that's going to move up into this year. So assuming that does, I think he's a good chance at director. I think Inside Out 2 is a very good shot at animated. What's her name? Someone's in the movie. Mickey 17, the actress. I think she, is it Toni Collette, maybe?
Okay.
I don't have that full cast.
I think she's in that. I think she might have a good chance. I would love to see Austin Butler for Dune 2 for supporting. I don't think that's going to happen, but I would love it. So yeah, we got some good movies coming up. Sing Sing, though, I'm very excited about. And Challengers. Oh my God, Challengers. Could be the best movie of the year. I don't know.
Yeah, I have a strong feeling not only that Austin Butler will get nominated, I think he is the clubhouse favorite to win for Dune
March.
2 right now. I understand.
It's fucking
right.
March. His competition right. is Adam Scott and Madam Webb. Come on. I mean, like, oh, it's, wow. nothing wow, has come okay. out yet.
Hey.
Do
careful.
Not
I love
besmirch
Adam
the
Scott.
Name of Adam Scott.
I love Adam Scott.
That's not his yeah. fault.
I'm watching Austin Butler on Master of the Air on Apple. And I'm like, how many times can you play Elvis? Because I've yet
He's
to
not
see
Elvis
him
in Dune 2.
I've yet to see him do another character.
Watch right. Dune 2 then. He's...
So I'm going to make a weird, bold yet. Prediction, but I'm going to put out John Watt for Best Director for a nomination for a film that is a psychological thriller called Wolves, starring George Clooney and Brad Pitt.
Because I mean,
I'm gonna put my stamp on that one right now. I'm probably gonna regret it, but you know, sure, why not?
I know damn well Yorgos will be nominated because the world just hates me, and I'm gonna have to continue to deal with this guy. So he'll
so
get it.
Where are you planning on putting your stamp, Tom? I mean, is this gonna be a tramp stamp?
You want me to put a tramp stamp on a director? I mean,
well, no, you're putting the stamp on, and I'm just.
Fine manipulation with my fingers is not great. You know, I'm not a sewer or, you know. Don't know.
Cerise Ronan, too. She's got I think she's got two movies coming out this year. She could be a big player.
That's one of Dana's favorites, Saoirse. Yeah. Yep. No, that's another one of the, like, best actresses not to win an Oscar yet. Like, somehow, as much as I liked the Jennifer Lawrence win at the time, everything since then has just kind of degraded it. Including True. Last night where she was like in a hostage video.
I was impressed they got her back.
Oof, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Adam, what do we have coming up on the circuit verse in the next couple of months?
The streaming circuit?
Yes.
Yes.
Do I get that wrong every time?
About every time. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
No,
consistency
next couple months.
Is great there, Tom.
Well,
as long as it's consistently wrong, you know, if you were wrong and inconsistent, that would be bad. But as long as you're consistently telling the wrong thing, we're good.
Yeah. Okay.
So the next couple months, we got Age of Ultron coming out on our crossover podcast.
Yes.
Beginning
next
of April.
One up. Correct.
Yep. Not too much else though. The next movie Madness won't be until May.
Okay.
And I haven't even fully figured out what I'm doing yet, so we got some time there. But the Rev Almanac is gonna we have Oscars reaction podcast coming out either Tuesday or Wednesday after the Oscars, and then just some Rev Almanac episodes in the next couple months until we do our next Madness.
Yeah. Sounds good. And we're still on for Spielberg Madness later this fall.
Recording in October, releasing in November. Yes,
and
that'll be a fun one.
We're doing all 35 of his movies on the bracket, right?
No, we are not. No. It's 33. Two will be cut.
How do you cut two?
Well, the committee meets, and the committee will decide what films get in and what films don't. The committee giveth, and the committee taketh away.
May the odds be ever in your favor.
I'm still going to watch all 35.
I'm not asking you to do that. That is you deciding to watch 35 films of your own volition. I do not want to hear you complain about doing that, because I am specifically telling you, you do not have to do that.
I will complain early.
I'm sure
and
you
often.
Will, but I...
He's going to do it anyway.
I mean, yeah, I've got to go through like 52 films for doing the 2008 pod in December.
Again, didn't ask you to do that. So no one's asking.
A lot of those
this.
Are going
to
be like rewatches that have no possibility of being nominated for anything. Like I have no idea why I would nominate Forgetting Sarah Marshall for anything, but it's one of my all-time favorite movies. So of course I'm going to watch it because it's a 2008 movie.
Just coming lean on this. Your mother, or his mother, and I oftentimes pour a glass of wine and sip late at night and try to remember when we dropped him on his head.
Dana, do you think you're going to be able to agree with Tom on any picks in the madness, yet alone every single pick? Because we can't move on until you both agree. So how do you think, how long do you think that podcast is going to go?
I don't know.
It's 32 matchups, so it's a lot.
2-3 weeks tops.
Wouldn't it be? Gotta, yeah, okay. I guess it is 32 with 33 picks. Yeah, okay.
You guys got to agree 32 times.
Oh, well. I think
does
there will
the word
be somewhere.
Perpetuity mean anything?
Yeah, I think there will have to be a tiebreaker method in that, because coming to a consensus on a few of those might be hard. Like, I don't think in the early parts of the bracket we're gonna have a lot of disagreement, but when we get to like settling between Saving Private Ryan and Jaws and Raiders and Schindler's and et cetera, it's gonna be some really big fights.
Let's put it this way. Okay, as a lawyer, and you go through law school, you have to go through this thing and you do property and estates and all this, okay?
In bird law.
Yeah, in bird law. Anyway, in the movie Body Heat, okay?
Oh, boy.
They set the entire film up on the fact that William Hurt creates an estate which violates the law against perpetuity. And no one, I don't understand exactly why they did it, but the only people that going, yes, 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 are people who have been through law school and were awake that day that they taught this stupid rule that never exists in the real world. I remember sitting there and watching this and going, oh my God, there's actually an application for this? But anyway, that's what we're talking about. This is the rule against perpetuity, which is he, even if we agreed, would try to find some way to disagree simply because it's my opinion.
True. I'll have to put like a timer on each match. And if you can't agree in the allotted time, I'm going to break the tie. We'll have to do it.
I guess that's probably the only way.
We're
going
to have some rules in that regard.
Yeah.
Because it is going to get contentious for a few of them. Like, I think he and I agree on a lot of things, but there are just some of them where I think we're going to think very differently. Because when it comes to the tip top Spielberg movies, it's going to be contentious.
Yeah,
so,
Jaws versus BFG. How do you pick?
Okay.
What do you choose?
What do you do?
Now, BFG versus The Adventures of Tintin. Now we've got a fight.
Well, when he told me he was going to be watching 1941, I'm like, oh my God. I watched that at the theater, and I remember sitting there and looking at him. I went with my friend Eric, who I'm still friends with after all these years, and we looked at each other and went, what the fuck is this? It wasn't funny at all, and it had Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi, who we both love from Saturday Night Live. We thought this was going to be hilarious. It was hardly.
Well, Tom, maybe you and I have to conspire to have 1941 win, just so Dana has to watch it and do a whole podcast on it. Just collusion.
I don't know if I want to do that. Watch it again? But to maybe make both of you watch it now, there we go. That might be interesting. Be the true troll that my father's taught me to be.
Or maybe it won't make the bracket. Maybe the committee will decide it isn't worthy.
Betsy, Trent, what do you guys got going on over at Never See It coming up?
Well, because we just watched a whole lot of Best Picture nominees, it is our tradition to get as far away from that as possible. So for the rest of the month, we're having Stripper Sunday, and we're watching a whole bunch of movies about strippers.
Oh, boy.
So Magic Mike, Striptease.
So the first one we're doing is Striptease.
Yep. Mm. Okay. And I think that's
and is Burt Reynolds' performance in that
movies.
Just awesome.
Let me tell you, you'll get the full effect of this episode on Sunday, but that movie was not at all what I thought it was.
Okay. Well, I've never actually bothered to see it.
I will tell you, it's an experience.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm feeling watch-along with Adam.
We watched Showgirls a couple years ago, so alas, we already did that one. Yep.
Okay.
But we've got the Full Monty and Hustlers.
Interesting.
They're going to be the other ones.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I can buy into that. Cool. Dad, our next couple of episodes are Laugh Riots. We have The Diary of Anne Frank coming this next week. It Happened One Night is releasing on Wednesday, but the week after, so a week from this coming Wednesday, is The Diary of Anne Frank. And then we have The Passion of the Christ.
Yes, two films with big chuckles throughout.
A laugh riot.
Yeah. And then we're revisiting a film that Adam has yet to see, The Godfather.
True. Still haven't seen it.
Someone else in this group has never seen The Godfather.
At this point, I just avoid it to piss everyone off. Because everyone's like, you have to watch it. I'm like, well, I don't have to.
So. I have that instinct too. The more you're told you have to, the less you want to.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah. And that's why I told Corns to cut it out when he was trying to really get on your case today about not watching Shawshank.
Yeah. Well, that one I'm watching soon. So
you'll see it when you see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, he has to do it for the 1994 I'm one of the 10 people who saw Shawshank at the theater.
Yeah, but you missed the opening 10 minutes.
Yeah, I know, because we had babysitter issues.
And does anybody know what the actual first 10 minutes of the movie are? You catch it about like 20 minutes in every time. Yeah. That's how it's been seen by the majority of people for 40 years, 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, you could cut the first part off and no one would notice because they talk about it throughout the rest of it and you get enough feeling for it. I didn't even realize there was anything before it until I sat down and started watching it from the beginning once.
Just circumcise it right off.
Wow. Okay.
Just the tip.
All right.
Take the top off.
With that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's been fun with all of you. Adam, thank you for joining us partway. I know that you had your own things to record tonight, but we appreciate you popping in. And Betsy and Trent, great to meet you. First time guests on the show. And thank you very much. Before we go, where can everybody find you on your socials? For Adam, social pronouns.
Pronouns.
Yeah. Make sure that everybody can follow your stuff.
You can follow me at Streamin' Circuit. That's Streaming Circuit without the G on streaming. So Streamin' Circuit, and also at Rev Almanac.
All right, perfect. And Betsy and Trent?
Yeah, you can find us on Twitter, neverseenit_pod. All of our personal tags will be in the description of that account. And of course, Never Seen It Podcast with Betsy and Trent on all podcast services worldwide.
Perfect. And if you want to submit more Ask Dana Anything questions, that is on at Gmote Podcast on all of your socials. And now including Letterboxd and TikTok and YouTube and all of those other places. And if you want to submit them to Dana directly, you can slide into his DMs on X or Instagram, I think at Dana W. Duncan. So, that might be interesting.
And also on TikTok, for that matter, if you want to follow me and message me directly. Yeah.
Bring your eggplant emojis.
Mm. Okay. So that is a great place to cut it. This has been very fun for our first attempt at a live stream. And I think I will try and throw this up on the audio feed. We'll just kind of cut it down. But for anybody listening to this later, thank you very much for tuning in after the fact. We may try this again in the near future. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for having us.
Have a good one.